Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I appreciate the question, but we're always hunting. That doesn't change for us. We're always hunting. Expectations on the outside, whatever that may be, it really doesn't change who we are, right? The expectations from the outside don't permeate inside our building. And now we have to change what we're doing just because of outside expectations. It really doesn't matter. My message, our focus as a team is it's always been consistent, same as it was last year, is, man, you show up and we continue to get better every single day. You're the best at your position. You're the best for our team. Then that's what wins games, right, for us, when everybody is really striving, putting the work in, right, to be better. And that's what it's all about. We don't care about expectations. Talk doesn't win games. We have to go out and play good football when that time comes.
All right, that was D'Amico Ryans. We just played that in headlines. That was D'Amico Ryans when asked yesterday about being the hunted instead of the hunter this year. Here was Will Anderson yesterday when he was asked about expectations for the Houston Texans.
The expectations in the Texans have always been the same. No matter the outside noise, no matter the media, any of that, like, we have a standard that we have to play to. We have a mentality that we play to, and that's the only thing that we have to play to is everything that happens in this building. And I would just say complacency is no place for that here at all. What we did last year was last year. What we're going to do this year is what we're going to do this year. And we can't focus on the past. So right now, it's just keeping that same mentality. And that's the swarm mentality. When all else fails, what are we going to do? We're going to go out there and swarm. And so that's what type of team we're going to be heading into this new season.
You just got an A, Will. You got an A plus on the test. On the test where the one question is, how do you handle expectations?
That is, you know what, I know what Will does. Will, who sits next to CJ in the team meetings, I'm guessing that Will is the kind of guy that whatever the motivational speech of the day is, he's writing it down off of the PowerPoint presentation.
100%.
And like circling it and everything, which is an awesome thing to do, kids. If you ever do that, take notes and like whatever pep talk you're getting, don't get cynical about it. Buy into it, hook, line, and sinker. And I feel like that's what Will does.
Dude.
Will is capable of being indoctrinated, and that is a good thing to be.
In the NFL, yes. Especially, man, he recited the D'Amico 316 chapter and verse right there, man. Like he nailed it.
By the way, I love the swarm acronym only if I ignore the acronym itself. This was 100%. Every time I hear swarm, I'm like, no, it's the word swarm. That's what you want, is the way the defense swarms and everything. D'Amico came up with the word swarm and then backfilled it with words
special
to make it an acronym.
Work ethic.
Yeah.
And relentless mindset, Seth.
Yeah, like it should be swarm, but it's swarm because he came up with some words that fit it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fine. It's just fine because I like it. I think it's something that people can rally around, but let's call it what it is. It's not an acronym.
He hyphenated work ethic and turned it into one word.
Yeah,
yeah. Here's Will Anderson. Man, this answer yesterday, as I was listening to Will, I'm like, this is the stuff right here, man. Like, this is what I think Nick Caserio, D'Amico Ryans, Like, this is what they envisioned when they went up and got C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, and what they envisioned when they really started molding the team last year in D'Amico's kind of image and his vision. And here is Will talking about the culture in the building with the Houston Texans.
Yeah, it was a lot at the Pro Bowl, man. It was a lot of guys like, yeah, tell them I'm trying to come over there. Like, tell D'Amico I'm loving what I'm saying, but I'm like, Texas ain't for everybody, man. It's just a different type of DNA you have to have to play here, man. It's a different type of character you have to have. And you just got to love football, man. And I think, you know, the front office and coach, they do a really good job of choosing the guys that they want to be in here that, you know, can help change the culture and help keep uplifting the culture and, you know, being a positive impact not only on the building but in the locker room as well.
And the original question was, hey, did you have a lot of guys, you know, basically coming up to you? You know, have you, yeah, has it been different talking to guys around the league this offseason?
Right. Which Will had talked about at the very end of the season. He talked about how like Clowney and others had come up to him and said, yeah, I would love what you're doing there. I love the fact that Will took it upon himself to be a gatekeeper,
yes,
for the Texans
offense
away. Not to mention,
yes,
to keep D'Amico out of, like, Will basically said, you think I'm going to risk getting D'Amico in tampering trouble for you,
right,
Tyreek Hill? I think not. Yeah, right, Quentin Nelson. Whatever. I was going through the AFC Pro Bowl roster figuring, like, who did Will think didn't have the special mindset or DNA. I came up with – now, some of these guys weren't at the Pro Bowl itself, either because of the Super Bowl or because this didn't feel like
Skipped
it.
Skipped it, yeah.
Not Texans worthy. This is who I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Travis,
sure,
Kelce.
Yep.
Quentin Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
Max Crosby. I don't like that he doesn't own his abuse of Pat Mahomes. Jalen Ramsey.
Hell yeah.
Laremy Tunsil. At the Pro Bowl, he was telling all these guys, like, nope, sorry, man. You got to really be all about the football and love the game.
In fact, he walked up to Laremy and said, I don't know if you have what it takes to be a Texan.
What if Will, everybody else around the league right now is like, man, I know people like this Will Anderson, but he was kind of a prick to me at the Pro Bowl.
That's it, man. He's like,
I told him that I thought about, I kind of like to play, and he said, meh.
He's a bouncer. He's the bouncer at Club Texans, man.
He is, yeah. He's standing up,
sorry,
there.
Sorry, Tyreek. This is a fake swarm ID that you've got here. You're not swarming. This is a fake swarm.
Qualifying these guys
right
before they're allowed
this
to talk
you
to him about
this
coming
is,
to play for
this
the
is
Texans.
This is Stephon Diggs. It just says Tyreek Hill on here.
I honestly, though, in all seriousness, I went through and I was looking at the AFC Pro Bowl roster.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's somebody there that Will thought, like, I don't know, Quinnen Williams. Who was it? Was it DeForest Buckner? I don't know.
I don't have it in front of me.
It wasn't T.J. Watt.
I think Jalen Ramsey's actually a decent guess.
You know, Jalen Ramsey might be a guess.
Ramsey's turned into a bit of a kind of a, you know, vagabond here later in his career. You know, he went to the Rams for two first round picks, but then he went to the Dolphins for a third. And I think if you're a Dolphin, you're looking around the room going,
yeah,
it's two of the guy that's going to get us there. Jalen Ramsey is a Mulligetta guy, so he's probably got a relationship with C.J. Stroud to some degree,
yeah,
right? I think Ramsey's a good guess. Plus, he is somebody who I'd be like, I don't know at this
what
stage
if it was
in
Justin
his career.
Simmons? What if the Texans didn't go after Justin Simmons because Will Anderson's report back from the Pro Bowl was that he wasn't Texans worthy?
Yeah, yeah. As we know, there are two people's opinions that the Texans trust, Will Anderson and Colin Cowherd.
Which, speak of the devil, Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah.
Who, the Colin Cowherd disclosed yesterday that Kyle Hamilton, when he was interviewed by Colin Cowherd before the draft, he got a call from the Texans,
yeah,
saying, hey, would you, you know, could you spare 5 minutes to tell us what you think about Kyle Hamilton, like, based on his interactions maybe off camera?
Somehow.
Like, what was he? The Texans are big on this, I know, because CJ yesterday talked about how when he was on his top 30 visit, they asked him about the personalities of the other two guys that were there with him taking a visit as well.
Yep.
They love to get those little tidbits about, like, you know, the classic, how does a guy treat the driver on the way from the airport?
Yeah, yeah,
does,
yeah,
he act like a diva and act like the driver isn't even a human being, or is he somebody that actually, you know, is he polite? Did he, you know, did he take interest? All that other stuff.
I felt bad for the answer Seth's talking about. CJ mentioned Tajay Spears was in, yep, on a 30 visit the same time CJ was last year. And then he couldn't remember the name of the other guy, the lineman from North Dakota.
It was that big Neanderthal-looking Cody Mock character from North Dakota. Yeah.
Kind of bad for him. Like, CJ's like, yeah, this other guy, if I can't remember his name. Tajay Spears.
Somebody in the – I'll credit somebody in the – somebody in the room knew it immediately,
they did.
So good for you.
Yeah, yeah, good job, good job. Text us, or if you're a media member listening, text me on the bat phone and tell me who that was. We need to credit them. That was pretty good. Here's Will Anderson on his relationship with C.J. Stroud.
You know, C.J.'s a great guy, man. He's easy to work with, great friend, great brother, great teammate, all the things you act for in a guy like that, man. And I think we were just being our authentic selves. Like, he gets to be him, I get to be me, and we come together and we just be goofy all the time. And we're just those young selves getting to come to work every day and love football. But we also know that balance of when it's time to get serious. And I think that's what helps us a lot. We have a healthy balance of when to play and, like, when do we need to, like, chill out and we need to lock in. And, just his work ethic, man. I think a lot of people in the locker room took note of that very quickly. Like, this guy, he comes to work every day. Like, he wants to be the best. Like, he wants to be the greatest to ever do it. And that's the type of mindset that I have. So seeing a guy like that, that just pushes you more. And it just built that connection through the whole building, because when people see that, they want to feed off that and they want to be a part of that too.
I feel like in that, when he talked about, like, they know when to chill and when to take care of business, I feel like in that relationship it's completely at some point CJ saying, like, all right, just chill.
Yeah.
Chill. Would you chill for a minute?
Settle down.
They're trying, Will Strull trying to have a tickle fight. And CJ's like, just chill. Will you chill? And Will's like, yeah, sorry.
Right.
I got excited.
I know. Yeah. When Will's like, we get to come in and be all goofy and everything, I'm like, I'm going to guess the percentage of goofiness in that relationship. I'm going to go 90-10, Will. And I mean that lovingly, by the way. That's zero shade at Will Anderson. Will Anderson's awesome. We people know how we feel about Will Anderson on this show. Let's hear from the other side. Here was C.J. Stroud. I feel like we're playing Love Connection or something. That was Will on C.J. Now here's C.J. on Will.
Ooh. Last year, we met before the draft, and we were like, we were just kind of making fun of each other, like, hey, what if we got on the same team? You know, lo and behold, we did, you know, and it's been a blessing ever since. I thank God that I got to be teammates with Will Anderson, because I definitely don't want to play against him. So, I mean, we're just pushing one another. We sit next to each other in team meetings, and, you know, we're constantly talking about, like, how we can get this team better. And honestly, like, we talk about how we can get it closer. It's not all about just work. We're trying to build. You know, D'Amico always talks about the closest teams are the best teams. And, you know, for us, we're trying to build a close team and just do it in a natural light, in a natural way. So I thank God for Will, and his family's been amazing. His mom, his dad, his sisters have always been really nice to me and my family. So it's a blessing to be, you know, around somebody with just a good spirit and a good soul.
The part that is really interesting about both of those guys, in all seriousness, is both Will and CJ, I think, are mature for their age when it comes to, like, not just thinking about being leaders or what have you, but in genuinely trying to change and improve the culture itself. But, and, you know, because after this season, Will spoke about this really interestingly and talking about reaching out and being sure that people in the organization know you care about them, not just the other players, but the front office staff, you know, people that work in the ticket office, all of that. And it's kind of a way of thinking about the group that I think a lot of young leaders who are still some kind of sometimes selfishly oriented, you know, like, young leaders, a lot of times it's still more about, like, how can I make myself look like a
totally
good, how can I get these guys to do what I need them to do?
Yep.
Where I think with both of those guys, they have a more selfless motivation about
yes.
it. I'm not trying to paint them out like saints or anything. It's just different. Like, it sticks out like a sore thumb to me.
Yeah.
The way they talk about being leaders, it's in a different vein and coming from a different angle than most young guys who are talking about leadership.
And it's hard not to separate draft night from just the thought when you hear both these guys back to back like that, and when you hear them talk about the mentality that you're talking about there, Seth. And I think back, the Deshaun Watson trade, like, if we're dissecting the Deshaun Watson trade, and I promise those of you who get uptight when we bring up Deshaun in any shape, form, or fashion, it's going to dwindle as the weeks and months go by here, because the Texans are essentially out of the Cleveland Brown draft pick business after this year. They've got a couple, like, little day three picks that are remnants from the trade, crumbs from the trade,
yeah.
But the major picks are all gone. The biggest thing that the Deshaun Watson trade allowed you to do, the biggest thing, was go get Will Anderson. Because that was the 12th pick in the draft, which was the pick you got in that draft from Cleveland. And then you didn't trade the Cleveland pick this year to move up and get Will. You traded your own pick. But the fact that you had two first-round picks is what gave you the flexibility to make that trade. It gave you the it gave Nick Caseri the ability to be aggressive and not gut the top of a draft by trading away a first-round pick. You had two of them this year. So you trade up from 12, you use a first-round pick, and it allows you to go up and get Will Anderson. And that to me, is the biggest derivative from the Deshaun Watson trade. If you're looking for the biggest positive from the Deshaun Watson trade, you can look at Will Anderson as a direct result of that deal. It's hard to find direct results from the Deshaun Watson trade because Nick moves around so much. You know, you really have to draw a map to get to which pick was which. But I think you don't have to go too far to draw a line from the Deshaun Watson trade to Will Anderson being a Houston Texan.
It's funny when you talk about Nick Caserio and trying to track any of his trades or anything. It's like trying to track a dollar through your personal finances. Like, oh, okay, part of your paycheck was this dollar.
That dollar
this
right
month.
There.
Yeah, okay, what'd you use that dollar for?
Right.
Like, went to a lot of different things, really, truth be told, if we had to split it all up.
Yeah.
So, I think, like, right now, I'm glad that there was a tone set where these guys very much realize and understand that I don't think there's nobody from the Texans that's going to come out and say, wow, this is a dream team scenario. You know,
no chance.
With all due respect to a young Vince Young, who is a younger and more, you know, not as mature he is now. That was a thing that just caught a lot of headlines and frankly was just putting the cart ahead of the horse when it came to the Eagles that year in calling a dream team scenario. And I think the interesting thing about it is that I don't feel that this was a directive given by anybody. I don't feel like D'Amico told Will or CJ, hey, be sure everybody knows that we haven't accomplished anything yet. I think that's just kind of they're naturally in their DNA.
Yeah.
Like Will said, it's just it's a certain type of DNA.
I think that's why those guys are Houston Texans. It's a chicken and egg thing. You know, like it's not one of those things they came into the building and they indoctrinated them and now they feel this way. Like that's how they're wired. That's why we picked that guy. That's why we traded up for that guy. 100%. 100%.
You know, it's now this is making me feel old, Sean. I'm figuring I should probably explain the dream team comments, right? To dudes in their 20s. How long ago was the dream team scenario? Was that the
2011 offseason?
2011 offseason.
Cuz that was the same offseason that the Texans signed Jonathan Joseph. Remember
cuz
Nnamdi Asamoah was part of the dream team.
That's right. Nnamdi Asamoah was part of the dream team. The Texans just they hedged their bets by signing just one guy who would become one of the top five Texans all time in Jonathan Joseph.
Yep.
And also then and Danielle Manning, who was a very, very, very good player
really good.
For the Texans.
Yep. Yeah. Really, really good. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Sean, this is from Ocho. Did you hear the rant that Todd Callis went on during the game about fans doing the wave? I did. The fans did the wave while it was 2-1 in the eighth inning. And the Astros lost 6-1. I think it affected Josh Hader, if you want to know the truth.
He might have been. He was like, what the hell? I'm trying to get amped up for this thing here.
Damn wave.
And then
going
what is going on? We got the wave going on now?
It's amateur hour, man. Stop doing the wave, all right?
I stopped. I can't get worked up about the wave anymore. Although, if I were there in person and I was sitting there just sitting, trying to take in the game, and I'm getting my vision obstructed by some bastard in front of me. All right. Then it would start to bother me.
Yeah. Who is this year's Houston Texans? Who in 2024 is the 2023 Houston Texans? An audio friend of the show asks the question. We'll try to dig into it coming up next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Good to be with you. Texans are a definite media darling heading into the preseason, you know, the off-season activities here, and they certainly will be throughout the summer months. Colin Cowherd yesterday talked about the Texans in glowing terms, asked about who this year's version of the Texans will be. We'll get to that. But first, he said, he outlined it here. He said, this team went from a laughingstock to a contender real fast.
1 year ago from today, the Houston Texans were a laughingstock. And this is the key to the NFL. And politicians, do you bring hope? Something new, something fresh. Do you deliver hope? Nobody delivers hope like the NFL. The Houston Texans. Bad ownership, bad roster, bad quarterback, bad team. Bad stink, no inertia. What did they do? C.J. Stroud with the number 2 pick, moved up to the number 3 pick, got Will Anderson. Both are rookie of the year. The Houston Texans win their division, win a playoff game, and now they're tied for the third best odds to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC. They were a laughing stock a year ago. 2 Super Bowl contender. 2 picks, 1 coach, got them all right.
Yeah.
And that's the lead.
Easy peasy.
That's all you got to do.
Just got to go 3 for 3.
Coach, right? It turns out that the GM that was getting all kinds of criticism, basically for not having any draft picks and for the previous quarterback being what should we call him? An alleged sexual misconductor?
Yeah, that's safe right there. Yeah, I would say so.
He settled the lawsuits. It's not like he was ever found not liable or not guilty or anything.
Right, right.
So, yeah, whatever he was. He was an alleged sexual misconductor.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. That's all you got to do. Just nail your first couple of draft picks. Get a coach who really was only interested in your previously dysfunctional team because he was drafted there 17 years earlier. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do. You know what? The Panthers kind of did that. Who's their GM right now?
Dan Morgan.
Yeah. Linebacker. Previous first-round draft pick.
That's true.
Out of the University of Miami, if I'm not mistaken.
That's true. They kind of tried it with Frank Reich last year. He was the first quarterback to ever play for the Carolina Panthers.
Oh, he was?
Yeah. Back in first one to start. I think they drafted.
What happened? Burline took over. Burline was
that was late. That was late '90s. They drafted Kerry Collins, but they didn't start him right away. Yeah.
Oh. All right.
Yeah. So they kind of tried. It didn't work. Not as well as it worked here. Cowherd reminds us that this is the only sport, the NFL, where you can really flip it this fast.
In baseball, you have to buy relevance. And about 6 teams, maybe 4, can afford it. In the NBA, you trade for or buy relevance. But the stars mostly want to play in about 5 places. Miami, LA, you get it. In the NFL, you draft relevance. And because the kids don't come out as like true kids, they're 21, 22, 23. They've been coached hard. They can deliver and change your franchise if you hit on just 1 or 2 like Houston.
I agree with that, by and large. I mean, there's exceptions, you know. There's exceptions in the NBA, you know.
Yeah. No, and there's huge, like him saying you have to buy relevance in Major League Baseball. I mean, there's a definite correlation, but it's a...
Yeah, I don't think the Astros are one of the 6 teams he's referring to there.
Right. Know? No, yeah, he doesn't. But regardless, yeah, I think the biggest thing, because we saw this, I used to say this, the previous example that I would point to try to give myself hope in the case of the Texans was the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills who, you know what, ultimately what it ended up taking was, you get the right GM paired up with the right head coach and you draft a quarterback. And in the case of the Bills, like the fact that Josh Allen worked out was way more of an outlier random chance thing than C.J. Stroud. Because Josh Allen was from a small school, inaccurate, can't cure accuracy, all of that stuff. Not to mention you got a minor Twitter scandal as he gets drafted.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
But it was, but what was it with the Bills? It was the GM, the head coach, and the quarterback all worked out together. And then a little sprinkle of Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, then you go get some other pieces for sure. All right, so Cowherd poses the question, who is the 2024 version of the Houston Texans?
Who is Houston this year? Well, Chicago and the Commanders look like if they get the quarterback right, things could get interesting. I think if the Chargers move down, pick up a couple of picks, Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers could be sensational. So Bears, Commanders, Chargers are my guesses as the three teams that could change everything based on a weekend.
And obviously he's not talking about doing it the exact same way as the Texans, or he wouldn't have brought up the Chargers, you know, who already have their quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, he's just talking about teams that could flip from going to 4 or 5 wins to winning double digits.
I think, honestly, a team that's already been talked about a lot, and that I think Monty Austin Ford, the GM of the Cardinals, has gotten a lot of attention, partly because he's done it. They've put out some weird. Okay. At times, the Cardinals social media crew has done some really good things in making Monty Austin Fort look good. They've also done some really weird things in making their head coach, Jonathan Gannon, look awful. So remember, there have been more awkward Jonathan Gannon videos put out by the Cardinals media themselves. Yeah. There was that. Remember, there was this weird pep talk about whether or not you're on the bus. Did you drive the bus or drive your car to work today?
Yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah, his pep talk. Yeah, I remember.
I think that, but the Cardinals are in the top three in terms of draft capital.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder with the Cardinals, it might end up being that, all right, Kyler Murray in this scheme for a second year might end up being really good. I remember after the Texans played in the Cardinals and it was Kyler Murray's second game back. You could tell there's something there. He looked tired because he has to do more in that offense than he ever had to do in his, you know, I don't want to say gimmicky, but in his college
style
offenses
offense.
Before.
Yeah.
Yeah, both in college and then his extended college offense as he did with Kingsbury.
Yep.
I think that offense, if he really latches onto it and tries to and really absorbs it and tries to run it, it's going to be good for him. So the Cardinals have a boatload of draft capital, and I don't know if any of the moves that they make or the draft, you know, I don't know what they do to, you know, get out of four if they do, but they might end up with a haul. And maybe it's the kind of haul with a transformed Kyler Murray that changes them very, very quickly.
Yeah.
With a team where the owner is facing all kinds of allegations, nothing elite. Oh, well, yeah, I guess maybe whatever. It sounds like it's a mess with the ownership.
Yeah.
The head coach has been mocked. Like all of these things that it felt like, okay, they can't really dig themselves out of this. They're just treading water with Jonathan Gannon or what have you. The Cardinals might be a surprise team this year and a surprise playoff contender.
Of the three that he brought up, Cardinals, Command. Well, he brought up the Chargers. I know you jotted a few down. Cardinals. He mentioned the Commanders, the Bears. Of the three you brought up, Cardinals, Commanders, Bears. The Cardinals easily. I think I would pick of those. If it's just flipping the script and winning games, I'll back Jim Harbaugh before I back anybody that's getting drafted by a team or any of these other head coaches. I'm a big believer in Jim Harbaugh. I think the Chargers could be much improved. I do wonder this, Seth, independent of Cowherd's question, and I got thinking about this in the previous segment when we were talking about Will Anderson and CJ Stroud. Like, I wonder, this is not a good year to try to do it if you're a team with multiple first-round picks because there's not a Will Anderson in this draft. This is a weak draft for edge rushers and for kind of defensive linchpin-type players. This is a very offensively skewed draft with linemen, offensive linemen, quarterbacks, and wide receivers. But I do wonder if given an opportunity, you know, next year and future years, you know, are teams going to try hard to copy what the Texans did in terms of finding one on each side of the ball? You know what I mean? Like, teams, like, if there were a similar draft haul this year defensively as there was last year, the Bears would be in a perfect position to do what the Texans did last year with the first pick and the ninth pick, and still with extra picks from the Carolina trade with Bryce Young. They would be in perfect position to do it. Honestly, they were in perfect position to do it last year if they had wanted to, but they decided to, you know, trade out of the number one overall pick. I wonder if teams are going to try to copycat that with the Texans. They're like, okay, we got our quarterback. Now let's get our defensive guy, and these are going to be the new tone setters in the building for
well,
us.
Well, okay, the other side of that, like maybe the more conventional way to do it, or like the Urban Meyer way to do it, is to get your quarterback and pair him with an offensive weapon. The Jaguars curiously chose to do that with a running back in the modern NFL.
Etienne,
so,
yeah.
That was dumb, but also the like pairing an offensive tackle with a quarterback is a popular way to do it. So maybe they do that. I mean, there's a boatload of offensive tackles in the draft. Like it's that might be the simplest and easiest, and one that they don't have to make an aggressive move to do.
I'll tell you what would get really fun is if you're a Bears fan is if they draft Caleb Williams with the first pick, and then one of those three receivers is sitting there at nine. Yeah. Either Adunze, Harrison won't be there. Neighbors probably won't be there, but maybe the Adunze kid from Washington is sitting there. And now all of a sudden you've got a wide receiving core of Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, and a top 10 pick. Kind of doing a little bit like kind of what the Texans are doing by going and getting Stephon Diggs for a young quarterback.
And just giving your guy multiple options.
All kinds of weapons.
We talked about earlier, it's not typical for teams to be aggressive in trying to stockpile three really good wide receivers at the top of your depth chart. If it happens that they're trying to do it through the draft typically, and a lot of times maybe that third guy is a slot receiver that you take in the second or third round. But to actually go out and aggressively pursue it and trade for or draft with a first round pick, that's not typical. But I do wonder, and this is where I'd be giving Casario some credit too. I wonder if maybe with the change in composition of the league and the way things are going, where teams are realizing, man, if you got a Tua Tagovailoa or what have you, let's just figure out exactly what we have by loading up as many wide receivers as possible or getting the best guys in here. Not to mention, it's easier to attack in the passing game than it's ever been before. And the wide receivers, there's been a tipping of the scales a little bit where teams are realizing, okay, wow, boy, these wide receivers actually, maybe they're worth more than what we thought before.
Yeah.
And maybe quarterbacks are a little bit more of a commodity.
Maybe.
Who knows? I just can't sit out here waiting for the next generational QB prospect to come along. I got to get to work, and maybe it's just through – I know that there's good wide receivers. I'm not so sure there's a good quarterback in this draft.
Dude, that would be Ryan Poles' way of trying to win the draft this year.
Yeah.
Would be, you still got extra picks from Carolina. I think they still have Carolina's two next year.
Yeah.
Take that two, take maybe a day three pick, move up from 9 to 4 and get Marvin Harrison Jr. And now you got Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. Like in the opinion of a lot of people, the two best players in this draft, that would be a similar thing. It wouldn't be offense defense like the Texans. And he'd probably get less criticism for that than Nick got for the Will Anderson move because he's not giving up a future first that everybody thought was going to be a top five pick. You're giving up a Carolina's two or whatever. But that would make the top of the draft awfully fun, is if Ryan Poles came away with Caleb Williams in a tippy top wide receiver like that.
And by the way, just as a way of closing the circle on this, I told you guys who the top three were in draft capital. Draft capital. The Texans are down at, I believe, 23rd in total draft capitable right now. Capital.
That makes sense. That's both quantity and quality of picks, I would imagine.
22nd.
Right?
Yeah, it's just total points based on your It's just you add up all the point values on the Jimmy Johnson draft chart for the picks that you do have.
Yep, that makes sense. No first round pick. I can see that. All right. Are we sleeping on John Mechie? Are we sleeping? Man, CJ Stroud. Mentions of John Mechie yesterday. Are we sleeping on Mech? That is coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, top of the hour, we'll get to the 8 at 8. We'll circle back to the Astros. They lose last night 6-1. Here was CJ Stroud yesterday. Funny story on how he found out about the acquisition of Stephon Diggs.
I found out I was actually asleep. I was asleep. I've been in the West Coast. I've been back home in L.A., so I was knocked out. And I keep my phone on do not disturb. I get a lot of phone calls. and so I didn't really know. And I woke up, and my boy Chase B texted me. He's like, how you feeling, bro? And I'm good, fam. How are you? And so, I had sent, like, five texts like that. And then I woke up. For real, this time, I was kind of like halfway texting in the bed. Woke up, brushed my teeth, washed my face, you know. And then I seen the news, and I seen it on like Instagram. I'm like, oh, shoot, that's what they talking about. So I didn't even tell Chase B or anybody like that. That was what I was implying, which is really just checking. I thought he was checking up on me, but no, it was cool. You know, it was really fun to see that. And this past, no, I mean, this last year I didn't have the opportunity to go before OTAs and have guys come out. I'll probably do something again, hopefully after OTAs. But that was just like, hey, man, I'm up here throwing. Like, you guys want to come down? And, man, it went great, though. Like, Mitch really, like, looks amazing. He looks really, really all the way back, you know. And then Tank looks great, and so did Diggs and a couple other guys who came out.
Okay, so he volunteers there at the end. It's a funny story. He volunteers there at the end, unprompted. Mitch looks really good. You know, Mitch, it's a question about Diggs.
And to explain, though, too, they were asking about whether that little throwing session at UCLA, whether that was like what he did last year, where he had a bunch of guys out together for a few days to work out. And they said, no, that was just a lot more casual, what happened last week in UCLA.
Yep. He pulls that together. And it was Mechie, it was Diggs, it was Tank Dell, it was Sketch, the streamer, all out there getting ready for the season.
I like to think that it was that maybe Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs happened to be in California anyway, but John Mechie was like just waiting by the phone, and he does not keep his on do not disturb.
Right.
And it was like he sees what's going on.
Yeah,
he sees that there's a big three now right now, and CJ just called up and was like, hey, I don't know if you happen to be in California, but we're throwing.
Yeah.
And Mechie was like as far away as possible within he was in Miami or something. He was like, oh yeah, I'm right down the street.
I'll be there.
And he just went and hopped on the first Southwest flight he could get out to
LA. I'm right down the street. I'll be there in 8 hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
So CJ mentions Mechie right there. Like, it's a question about Diggs. He mentioned Tank also, but he mentioned Mechie. Here was CJ when he was asked about, hey, how's Tank Dell looking?
He looks great. Yeah, you know, he's like you said, man, he's gotten a lot better. Mentally, you know, I think even for both of us, really all the rookies, you know, coming into year two, you know, everything's starting to slow down, and the wheels aren't turning so much up in your head. You know, you're starting to play ball, and, you know, having being able to throw with them in LA was really big, and, you know, Mitch looks amazing as well. And some of the guys that came out as well. So, you know, it's been amazing to get some work in.
Another Mechie mention. The question's not about Mechie. So the media in the room, sensing that, said, these are two straight questions where he's mentioned John Mechie. Hadn't thought about asking C.J. Stroud about John Mechie. What would the impact be for a healthy John Mechie for this team?
Man, he has a ton of value, a huge impact I think that he'll bring this season. I think last year was good to get his feet back in the water, you know, coming off of an injury, then something so traumatic, like being sick, how he was. And man, his mindset is just, you know, he's ready to come back and ball. So not only is he a great football player, but he's a great person. And I wouldn't want to be anywhere else with anybody else other than those guys in that room. So Mitch is looking amazing. Everything that he'll put on this field will be no surprise. But, you know, I think everybody in his room knows how special he can be, and he'll put that on the field.
Yeah, his former second-round pick. I mean, he was drafted there for a reason. Again, Seth, we got the draft coming up a week from Thursday. It starts. The Texans will, in all likelihood, be picking a week from Friday to begin their draft. And, you know, I've said all along that if they use one of those two second-round picks on a receiver, it is a bit of a referendum on where they are with John Mechie right now.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's where
to some degree.
I think that unless, you know, sometimes you don't want to read too much into it, because sometimes it might just be that, hey, this isn't a position of need, but my God, the three receivers that are remaining on our board are above all the offensive linemen, and they're right here right now. Like, we got to take one of these guys. So, but I think that John Mechie and Kenyon Green are probably both in a little bit of the same category, which is that the team hasn't written them off yet, but they can't bank on them moving forward. So, you know, clearly if they're going to bank on John Mechie, they wouldn't have bothered going out to get Stephon Diggs, I don't think. Like, that would be if they had an extremely positive appraisal of him.
Yeah.
But I think they probably, though, are also both realistically in that category of, we can't rule them out. We just don't know. Mechie was coming off an ACL, and then he had cancer. Those are kind of a couple of big whammies 2 years in a row.
When you say it like that, it's like, holy crap. Like, he did. Like, I feel bad about every critique I had of John Mechie last year. Like,
well, you know, and you always wonder, too, I think that aside from coming back from cancer, like, it's not as simple. I think sometimes because some guys have come back very quickly, you got to remember that everybody's cancer treatment is very individual to them. Even if they get the exact same protocol, like, different people are going to respond to it differently, and some people take a long time to respond to it or to recover from it, you know, even after they've recovered from the cancer. Not everybody gets back to be the same physically, so you just don't know until you got until you get a couple years out from it. The other side of it, though, too, Sean, is I'm like, even pre-cancer diagnosis, you just wonder, all right, well, like, how long was it affecting him before the actual diagnosis? Remember, David Quesenberry was not looking or feeling so good in that spring training OTAs before he ended up getting diagnosed with cancer. Yeah. I mean, he was feeling the effects of it, yep, before it was diagnosed. So I think Mechie is a wide open book, and there might be huge upside there given that he was dealing with those two major medical issues.
Yeah. Texter points out Mechie's best game was in the playoffs, 3 catches for 44 yards on timely plays. Yeah, he made a few plays in the playoff game. Man, I'm rooting for John Mechie. I would like nothing more than for a second round pick to work out here with Mechie, but even more than that, he seems like a great dude. I'm rooting for him. We root for the Texans. We root for good things. Injury updates from D'Amico Ryans yesterday. Speaking of Kenyon Green, D'Amico Ryans asked about Tytus Howard and Kenyon Green. Here's the latest.
You have guys who've missed time. You talk about Tytus, you talk about Kenyon. Those are two guys we feel really good about up front for us. You know, we talk about our line being a strong suit for our team, and getting those guys back healthy will only add to our group, only add to what we're able to do up front. So I'm excited to see Tytus back healthy, excited to see Kenyon, right, competing, healthy, and to give himself the best shot to go out and show what he's capable of. So I don't think he's had that opportunity fully, so I'm excited to see Kenyon perform. He's been working out. He's been consistent every day. He's been putting the work in throughout the offseason, so excited for him.
I can't wait to see Kenyon Green just at OTAs and stuff like that. Just see what he, you know, just see what he looks like. You know, see if he's
like physically what his composition is after having an entire. I mean, it was almost as if last year they put him on IR to go work out. You know, that
like a redshirt year.
I would say rehab, except that he was rehabbing from so many injuries. I mean, it was a constant litany from the very time the Texans drafted him, where he was already recovering from a knee injury, until he got a concussion in training camp. Then he hurt his shoulder during the season. He got off to a pretty good start by rookie standards. I thought he was doing just fine. And then he got injured in that LA game, and it was just all downhill from there. And he never looked nearly as promising as he did really, like, in Chicago. The Chicago game his rookie year, I thought that he actually looked like, okay, this kid might end up being a stud.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all went south after that. So I think that it's really just a matter of, is he physically resilient enough? Part of being a guard is being a dude that's tough as hell and doesn't get injured. You're always there. You're solid. You're steady. You're consistent. If you look at, like, steady and dependable deep offensive lineman, Chester Pitts was the ultimate in this, that he was built like a tree. Like, every one of his limbs was built like a tree trunk, in that it was like a huge circumference without a whole bunch of definition, but like impossible to break.
Yeah.
He looked unbreakable in a lot. He just looked solid, and that's what he ended up being. Kenyon Green's the opposite so far. I can't have a glass guard. It's not something that works out. So whatever his anatomical chain of issues was that was causing him to get injured all the time, I don't know how you fix that, but hopefully it's fixed.
What's the first thing this offseason where we as media members get to see it and we come away with, okay, this is who's running with the ones? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, is it mandatory minicamp? Do they do some walkthrough type stuff?
No, I've learned that you can't even use the first week of training camp for that, because they'll roll guys in and out and everything.
Gotcha.
I don't know. People report who's rolling with the ones, and it gets a lot of press, and then it turns out like, oh yeah, the guy we thought the starter wasn't actually even out there.
No, you're right.
You know, there's 100 guys on the field, so you're trying to keep track of everything.
Yeah, I'm just trying to picture what it's going to look like at left guard, because, you know, we know 78's going to be left tackle. We know that. You know, we know 69's going to be right guard. We know, I would assume Tytus Howard, if he's healthy and he's ready to go from his injury, he's going to be the right tackle. I wonder when that first set of ones, what we perceive to be ones, goes out there, where no, he's number 76 now, Kenyon Green. He changed numbers from 59.
It's The number, whoever goes out there the first time, it hardly ever really means anything. It's whether they stay out there and they're the only guys out there.
Yeah.
I'll be disappointed if they just pencil Kenyon Green as a starter. If they're not rotating guys there or something, I just won't understand it. I won't see exactly, okay, I don't – what have I seen from him that I haven't seen from Kendrick Green from Patterson or what have you? It's going to be an open competition.
Yeah, you just answered my question. I was going to say, well, who are the other names? It's Kenyon Green. It's Kendrick Green. That won't be confusing at all.
Patterson.
And Jarrett Patterson, who played center last year, but is, you know, played a lot of guard in college. And
Nick Broeker is there too. The guy that they had picked up from Buffalo off of waivers.
Yep. He was on the roster
at the time. Broeker, I thought we would have seen Broeker at some point last year. Broeker was picked up off of waivers from Buffalo. At the time, the story was that Buffalo really liked him and maybe thought that they could have snuck him through on waivers and signed him to the practice squad. We didn't really get a chance to see exactly whether there was basis for that or not.
Yeah. It's harder to sneak guys through on waivers now with Nick Caserio lurking. That dude was addicted to the waiver wire last year.
Yeah.
Guys up. Yeah.
He's like sitting in a trench coat waiting by the waiver wire line.
That's it.
You got smokes.
Here's D'Amico Ryans as we're updating on injuries. Here's the update from D'Amico on Tank Dell.
With Tank, man, Tank is back. He's starting to get in with our guys here at the offseason program. So excited to have Tank back. You know, that was a devastating loss for us last year, losing him. He's such a dynamic player for us. Such an inspiration for myself, for a lot of our team. So I'm excited to see Tank back working with our guys and excited to see him make that same jump that I talked about year one and year two.
Yeah, that's not hyperbole. That was a devastating loss. There were other losses the Texans had. No team lost more games to player injury this year than the Houston Texans. You know, just based surely on the number of games lost from guys, the Texans were the most injured team in football. That was... other than losing CJ for a couple games with a concussion, and even in those two games, they went 1-1. Losing Tank Dell, man, like devastating to me, doesn't begin to describe losing Tank Dell and what he meant to that offense.
You said they officially were the number one team?
In terms of number of games lost due to injury, yeah, they were number one by far.
Poor beleaguered Texans.
Yeah, by far. It wasn't even close.
I don't know if you can count Kenyon Green in that, though, too. I've got a little bit of it. Some of the offensive line stuff. Now, you know what, though? No, I'll take everything they say about the offensive line because they were starting off the season with four backup offensive linemen.
Yeah.
It was one of the more, I think, underreported aspects of CJ's rise was that the offensive line was completely battered, really for the entire season, but especially for the first half of the season where they were playing, in the first part of the season where they were playing with four backup offensive linemen. And that also he was doing it without the support of a rushing attack in the first half of the season, too. Mm-hmm. It really, I think, because people weren't actually watching the Texans all that much at that point, it was more of a nice story about C.J. Stroud without really considering all of the other constraints that he had, aside from just being a rookie on a previously bad team.
Yeah, it's funny because C.J. cites the Pittsburgh game in week four as the game where that was the game where he really started to feel like, okay, I'm an NFL quarterback. I'm getting this. And I would say, too, as somebody observing, that for me is also the game where I'm like, all right, this dude, he's the real deal. Like the way he closed that game out. And to your point, Seth, the starting offensive line in that game was Austin Deculus, Kendrick Green, Jarrett Patterson, Shaq Mason, and George Fant.
Ew.
And they won 30-6, you know, and that was against a team that has T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith as its defensive ends.
Yeah,
you know,
and Laremy Tunsil didn't come back until, you know, he was injured in the Baltimore game. Didn't come back until week five versus Atlanta.
Yep.
And that was also when, you know, the run game started to stabilize somewhat a few games after that, but it was also when Dalton Schultz started getting a lot more action after Laremy Tunsil. The left tackle didn't need help from a tight end chip block. You
great
know, Dalton Schultz could just actually get out on routes a lot more once Laremy Tunsil came back.
Yep.
And George Fant started playing a lot better, too.
He did. He got
better. George Fant was a big, which is another area of this team that, the importance of the swing tackle, you can't underestimate or understate like how important it was that George Fant was as good as he was last year.
It was huge.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.